Rory here, quick one. Phil and I were actually radioing in to record the intro and the outro links for this podcast, so we sound a little bit like we're in one of those Müller yogurt pots. Delicious, yes, but not so great for acoustics. But don't worry, just the intro and the outro and a tiny bit in the middle. The rest is totally good, so sit back and enjoy.
Hey, Laurie.
Hey, Phil.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very, very well. And welcome to all you listeners as well. Welcome to episode number 8, officially number 8, of the
Episode 8.
Thank you, Phil, of the Super Bailey Bros in Movie Land podcast.
Hey, another episode, another great episode, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. We've got lots of interesting stuff for you. What we don't have this week is a movie review, because I don't know whether you knew, but it's the holiday season, and with family bits and bobs and jetting all over the world, literally, we haven't been able to coordinate going to see the same film. So instead, we've got kind of four other special little treats for you.
We've got a movie hate section. I'll be expressing my dislike for big building destructions in big Hollywood blockbusters.
And we've also got the rewrite. The rewrite comes back. The last one was Star Trek Into Darkness. This week, we're talking The Matrix Reloaded and kind of, in brackets, Matrix Revolutions as well.
Another great section as well. We're going to be discussing showing movies to friends. A painful experience, I have to say. Wouldn't you, Laurie?
Well, or is it painful? That's the thing, you know. I imagine there are some people out there who are able to do it and love every moment of it because they've got such good taste. But for you and me, Phil, I think we share a nervousness and a pain and an anxiety about that whole experience.
Maybe it's just us, I don't know. Well, I guess that's what we're going to find out, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And then also, I am a big fan of animation in films, you know, both CGI and 2D, traditional hand-drawn stuff. But there are some key differences between the two. And I've got one that I want to bring to people's attention that I don't think I've heard anyone else talk about. So have a listen to that as well. I think, first of all, Phil, we've got some sad news, haven't we?
Have we?
Yes, we've got some very sad news because, you see, listeners, you may or may not have heard it on its last legs in last week's episode.
Oh, but, yeah. But I've Phil's already put it behind me. R.I.P.
Phil's microphone has bitten the dust. Have a look at the blog and you can see its last days in all its glory.
It was sort of a death trap, wasn't it?
Yes, it started falling apart. Not only was the sound starting to dip in and out, as we had in last week's Star Wars episode in particular, but the casing had sort of split and was beginning to be a hazard for Phil's lips, I think.
It was sort of like a cheese grater microphone.
So we wave a fond farewell to Phil's microphone. It's given us many minutes of fun and enjoyment, and thanks for your hard weeks of service.
Laurie, I've got something I think I need to talk about.
Oh, yeah?
It's been bugging me for quite a while.
How much bugging you?
Let's just say I hate it.
You hate it? Right. Hey, well, is it time for...
Movie hate.
I hate it. I hate it.
I was watching a trailer for another movie recently, and I saw yet again another boatload of building destruction featured in the movie trailer, and I hate that.
Which
man.
Film, sorry, which trailer was this?
That was for Batman versus Superman.
Oh yeah, the new upcoming blockbuster with what's he called, Ben Affleck
and Henry Cavill.
Yes, building destruction. It's been very common, hasn't it, recently in blockbuster movies.
It's been literally in every major film since Transformers 1 was the first big culprit I could remember.
Do you think so? And when did that come out? I can't quite remember myself.
That came out in like 2010 or maybe earlier. So it's been a good 5-6 years of just solid architecture
Non-stop.
Destruction.
Yeah, it's strange. And it seems to have taken on a new sort of new level of it. I think Man of Steel was where it really reached its zenith for me. And I nearly walked out of that film, actually. Sorry, anyone who enjoyed it. I couldn't handle it. The closing like 30, 40 minutes? It almost seems to me like someone has come up with a new algorithm, a CGI algorithm, which can realistically make complex looking giant buildings collapse into dust in a believable way. And so they thought, hey, this is so cool. Let's use it again and again and again and again and again. Like it was even, you know, Inception had a bit of that, didn't it? But kind of legitimately, because that was a dream world. So actually it was supposed to be slightly weird and dreamy and abstract.
It was literally the dream was collapsing. So the buildings collapsed and that's all it was.
Well, but why do you hate it so much?
I hate it just because from a personal level, I hate it because I'm just thinking, oh, all that money and time and energy clearing it up. And it's like, it's a tragedy.
In the world of the film, it's like, whoa, that would take a lot of undoing.
This would be like a major tragedy, like a building collapses and it's like a historic event. Like people will talk about it for years to come. And then you've got these superheroes flinging each other through every single pylon they can find. collapsing every building they seem to just touch with their elbow. They seem to make a
specific target for the tall buildings, don't they? Yeah, forget the open space.
It's like the same level of destruction as like the Power Rangers, you know, when they did the big fighting and they'd like be stomping on everything.
It's the Godzilla thing, man, the Godzilla factor from the Japanese, when was it? That was like the 60s, wasn't it? They were doing Godzilla even earlier than that.
Yeah, Godzilla was like all based around Hiroshima. Yeah, you know that was the inspiration of that. And so now we've got like these franchises doing crazy amounts of damage.
Mm.
I just think it's just ridiculous. It's too much. I just don't want it. It's
bad because in the real world of the film that it's asking you to engage with, because that's what films do, right? They need you to sort of project yourself into their world so that you can experience the tension and whatever what's going on. You just think it wouldn't work because there's so much destruction. The cleanup would be ridiculous. People would just be miserable. People would be distraught. There'd be a massive death toll. Like, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, like every single time I've seen Optimus Prime roll into some like shop or something like that on the high street, I'm just thinking, that's some guy's business. And it pulls me out of the movie. I'm just like, oh, poor guy.
That's true.
All he did was have a little salmon shop. And
why do you think then the movie makers keep doing it, and especially seem to be doing it in ever more increasing amounts?
It probably comes down to CGI a bit, in the sense that CGI is kind of uncorked to the bottle of potentiality or something like that.
Yeah, really. Okay.
Very astute analogy. You might want to
trademark that phrase, Phil, yeah.
But then basically you can destroy a building very easy. It's a nice geometric shape, and you just kind of, you could press a little button and they've probably got like a little scheme that deconstructs it.
Thing, yeah. Quite grey. I think they look very dull as well. But yeah, okay.
But it just seems to be that's they keep on going back to it. Every single big film seems to have just this crazy level of destruction.
It taps into something that's a little bit of a wider issue, which is sometimes I feel like there's a disconnect between the people who are asking for these effects and the people who sit there watching them. Because, you know, why would you use an effect in the first place? Surely it's because it's to reveal something that is, you know, intense and not part of your normal daily life, and to enable you to experience it and get the thrill out of it. You know, like a roller coaster or whatever.
Yeah.
But the scale at which it happens is like diminishing returns.
Yeah, because it becomes so old hat now. I've seen plenty of buildings collapse now. I've seen mass destruction, and it just feels like it's just like a button they press.
Yeah.
To kind of synthesize danger and
stakes. But then that's what I mean. Surely they can't literally expect the audience. I mean, that end of Man of Steel, who was directed that? Was it Brett Ratner?
Zack Snyder.
Zack Snyder, thank you. He can't seriously have been expecting us to be shocked and tense for 40 minutes straight, can he?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. And it just seems, so, I can't believe that the characters wouldn't be a little bit concerned about,
yeah, that's true,
about the buildings. I mean, I understand the villain maybe doesn't care, but Superman, he just seemed to be like flinging General Zod into stuff and just being like, that's the way to deal with it. Fling.
Well, and that's kind of, that's what I mean about this disconnect. So, and I thought that, you know, actually it's not a building collapsing, but in that same film in particular, there was a moment where Kevin, what's his name? It's not Spacey, Costner. He goes to get a dog, rescue a dog from a whirlwind. And it was one of those moments where I realized that there was green screen there. So obviously Kevin Costner in the studio was running towards a green screen to go and get this dog. But the size of the tornado in the finished product was so ridiculous. It was like the Greek god Typhon had turned up. That there was no rational person, even idiot Kevin Costner, would have run towards this to rescue a dog. In fact, they all should have been way further away because it was so gigantic.
They were under a bridge though, so they're fine. Like,
but this is the thing, like, there's this weird disconnect. Hurricanes. There's a really odd disconnect. And it taps into something where, you know, maybe there's a bit of a tipping point that's been reached where computer generated graphics, we've seen what they can do. And actually there is no limit, as you just said. And everyone knows that. The more money you spend and the more animators you have sitting down at computers making buildings collapse, you know, the less impressive it is. It's not enjoyable to watch because, yeah, of course they can do that. I've seen computers do it. It's not impressive anymore. So maybe the sort of movie makers haven't quite registered that yet. So rather than removing some of those scenes, they're trying to put in even more and make them even bigger.
To try and elicit a reaction.
Yeah, exactly. Because actually it doesn't bother people that much anymore.
But also what really bothers me about those big things, Transformers films especially, was they have these sort of crazy big buildings being destroyed and explosions going off. And then there's still loads of people around. Like, why are they not running away?
Mm.
It just drives me crazy. Like, it's like, oh, I'll run towards the action and the big destruction and the big robots fighting each other.
Well, is it a green screen thing? Do you think?
Must be, because like the actors don't know what's going on. They're just told to run some direction and look panicked. And then they've got like these animators animating these stupid robots sort of flinging their legs around. And like, there must be so many people that if that was real, there'd be like loads of squashed people from Optimus Prime just accidentally like taking a knee. You'd be like, oh, sorry, I tripped over. Splat.
No, I agree with you on that one. I mean, one of the things I know you wanted to talk about this is I wrote that it should be a plot element, but it isn't. Like you said, every massive chunk of debris landing in the middle of the street should be a moment where you see someone having to run away from it or, you know, becomes a real obstacle for a character, but it just doesn't. Do you know, one thing it did make me think of was the old Godzilla film, the one that was really, everyone hated it, with Matthew Broderick in it. Do you remember
that? Yeah, the like super CGI.
Yeah, because that had a massive monster walking around and causing destruction on a big scale. But I seem to remember a lot more shots being used of the people in their cars and the people on the streets dealing with this situation, as opposed to massive wide-angle shots of buildings collapsing, presumably with thousands and thousands of people inside.
Yeah, that's funny. I would never thought there'd be a good point to that movie.
No.
Like, but I guess it's spectacle, trying to pursue spectacle over reality.
Yeah, possibly. You know, one thing that it made me think of, and this is, I don't know whether anyone listening will have heard these guys, but there was a radio show that I loved before it went off the air, Adam and Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant. And they were talking about, it sounds like it's unrelated, but it will make sense by the end, I promise.
Okay, I trust you.
Thank you. There was, they were talking about a program called The Sky, I think it was The Sky at Night, and that it's sort of space exploration. And one of the things they specifically highlighted was that the distances and the sizes of the planets involved, as they describe them, they talk about 50 billion light years away or 10 million
miles away,
miles across, that kind of stuff. And the numbers are so large and they're so completely abstract when compared to anything that we understand ourselves. Like I struggle to walk a mile away. Do you know what I mean? And like, so extrapolating that to imagine 50 million miles, it's just like, I can't deal with that. Like, my brain just can't comprehend it. Like, I just see the stars in the sky as little pinpricks. I can't really imagine the ball of burning gas. I know that's the truth, but I can't really picture it. And I wonder whether there's an element of that here, because I can't actually comprehend what it would be like to see a skyscraper crumble into dust, or what it would feel like for such a shocking moment to happen. As you said, and if a historic event that we've talked about for hundreds of years, probably, because the scale, the number of people who would die, the scale of destruction, the scale of the rebuild, the money involved, the danger involved, but you know, the motives behind it, all that kind of stuff would be so serious that it would be a massive event. And so to see it happen 10, 20, 30 times is like hearing people talk about those stars that are billions of light years away. It just kind of all kind of goes into one mush. Like, my brain just sort of passes out.
And you're
just
going to like glaze
over. Like, you're at a mouth half open and you're sort of
dribbling down the side.
The building fell down. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
It just makes you to kind of zombie towards the mass destruction.
So you can't engage with anything. Like, it was one of the stupidest moments in that Man of Steel film. I'm sorry we keep coming back to it, but it's just one of the worst. I think
really
it's one of the worst films
I've
ever seen. I hate it. I really hate it.
That's my movie hate
in this case. It's just rubbish. It's a waste of time for other reasons besides this. But yeah, anyway, we won't go into that. sorry.
Save it for another day,
Laurie. The bit when towards the end there's a crumbling buildings, and it's like the director suddenly realised, you know what, I'm not really digging these building collapses. So why don't we have like literally one person get caught under some rubble? So forget the millions of the thousands of people who would have died or been trapped. Why don't we just have one person trapped under a stone? And why don't we make it like that can be a counterpoint to all the big drama? It's like, here's a personal story with one person. But it just becomes stupid. It's like a funny pantomime moment where, like, you've got, how can you possibly take it seriously, take one person's plight seriously under a stone compared to the absolute mass destruction that takes place in the very next cut? Do you remember that?
Of like an entire city, isn't it?
Yeah, and like it jumps from this one person, oh, can you get me out? I'm under this stone, please, to, oh, there goes another skyscraper. It's just like utterly incompetent. Can I say
ridiculous,
that?
Ridiculous, yeah.
Yeah, it was a waste of time. Well, man, I don't have much more to say, because I think most people listening will agree with us. It's boring to watch. It's completely abstracted from reality. You can't engage with it. It doesn't help any sense of drama at all. Like, if you made a film where one building collapsed and it had terrible repercussions, that would do the trick.
I wouldn't surprise me if there's a building, like there is a film which is just about some one event.
Well, there's things like The Towering Inferno and old films, like even Dante's Peak and that kind of thing, where you have the focus is one disaster that happens.
That's the entire movie, isn't it?
Yeah, and it causes multiple problems, and that's how it used to be done. And that's kind of, I guess that's the heritage of a lot of this stuff, is a good disaster. Even, you know, the Titanic is a good example.
Yeah.
Like, that's more recent, with lots of CGI and green screen, no doubt. But it works because it spends the entire final act exploring the plight of everyone involved. It doesn't, I mean, maybe, what's his name, Zack Snyder would have preferred that film if there were five Titanics that sank, you know, like one after the other.
Yeah.
And it was caused by a giant robot or something.
Yeah, the iceberg.
Yeah. Nickname. Maybe he watches that film and thinks it's really boring. You know what
Zack
I mean?
Snyder's like, oh,
for goodness
where's
sake,
the
man?
Robot?
Can you not make the ship bigger? Can you not have more of the ships? Yeah. Well, hey, there we go. Movie hate. I bet you everyone will agree with us on this.
If you don't, I'd like to hear how you couldn't.
Yeah. Like that new Superman film doesn't fill me with any joy. They even pretend to make it like, oh, there was so much destruction last time. Superman, is he a good guy or a bad guy? In all the trailers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the moral dilemma. And then yet by the end of even the trailer, you've seen...
More destruction, yeah, more crazy.
Buildings. Oh, dear.
Oh, man.
Hey,
sort it out, Hollywood.
Sort it out, Hollywood. Shape it up.
Okay, so, Laurie, it's time for another rewrite.
Sorry, I just noticed you say so all the time at the beginning.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, yeah, so the rewrite. Okay, what are we rewriting today?
Apparently my dialogue.
What are we doing?
So we are going to be talking about The Matrix Reloaded and Revolutions. I think there's loads of things we could say about how we'd fix those films. We're very lucky to have our other brother, Sam, with us again. So thanks very much, Sam, for being here.
You're very welcome.
Remind us again what Sam's creds are.
Oh, you know, everything. He's a history guy. He teaches. He's going to teach us about movie making.
He's going to teach us about movie making. Right. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you very much.
So The Matrix, great film. Love the first one. Matrix Reloaded was, I think, generally considered a disappointment.
I think quite famously one of the most disappointing sequels, or considered by many to be one of the most disappointing sequels.
I have to confess, I quite liked it. I still quite like it to this day.
Yeah, I can't help. It came out just the right time for me to be a teen and just love certain parts of it. I thought it was amazing.
You put your finger on the buzzer there, Sam, because, yeah, unlike some of the Star Wars prequels, which I will happily rewatch, even though they're not great, this one... I can rewatch bits, but not other bits, man.
I still enjoy it. I would say that there's only a couple of things which I think if they'd changed that, if they'd done it slightly differently, if it was written slightly differently, I think that film would be much higher regarded. I think there's a lot in there that is good, but lots of people disagree.
Well, tell us, why don't you, just to whet our appetite, why don't you tell us what you think in there is worth us hanging on to?
So I think there's some really good, solid action. I think that freeway sequence where they literally built a freeway and then they filmed it all.
They actually built that thing.
They built a mile-long piece of set, and they were filming like trucks and flipping and exploding and fighting all on the backs of lorries.
It was cool. It was super indulgent, but it was fun.
Very indulgent, but really good, exciting action sequence. I think the action sequence with Neo in the French chateau with all the swords and weapons and the walls, that's a really fun, exciting scene. Neo's in...
I disagree completely, by the way. I didn't like that scene.
I think it's great. Neo's in threat. He bleeds, because before that he's a bit of a superhero. But this time he's in a bit of peril. He's fighting well. It's exciting. There's cool sword fighting. That's some really good action throughout the film. Even the Burly Brawl, which hasn't aged well.
That's the Burly Brawl, what's that?
That's the one where there's a billion Agent Smiths.
Oh, the Agent Smiths. It was quite iconic. Not good, though. Have you seen it recently?
Well, so I was going to say, it ages poorly, but at the time when I watched it back in the day, I thought it was great. It was really exciting.
Do you know what I often think with that scene, when that comes to mind, is the music. Bump, 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 bump. Do you remember that? And it was like on a sawtooth lead. And it just like, it almost sounded like computer game music. And I remember in my head thinking, what, is this allowed now? Can we have rubbish music in films?
I quite liked it, so.
Okay.
But anyway, so those are the things I think are worth sticking around for. I think there's some really good action. I think there's some really good ideas in there as well. I think it expands on the Matrix films and the lore and the world. And I think if you're a big fan of the first Matrix, there's actually lots in there to really get you excited about. It's not just a repeat of the Matrix. It's actually contributing to the bigger world.
Yeah, no, I think I agree quite a lot with what Phil's saying, just because with The Matrix being so huge and iconic, with so many like key scenes and developing new kind of styles of filming certain things, they had to throw some of that in to show that it's kind of linking them together stylistically. So you had the slow-mo in that big hallway scene with all the swords.
Bullet time.
Exactly, yeah, all the bullet time stuff. I thought it was good to see that again. I like seeing Neo be an amazing hero because quite often the hero powers up to 11 and then he's done. He's done one fight, and so I want to see him be amazing for a while.
So you see the end result of the Matrix, where he got to at the end of the Matrix. He stays at that level. He's not sort of back to being a weakling again. He's actually
quite
awesome.
And it's not just one sort of big heroic effort. It's a continuation.
Yeah, exactly. And so him then being able to pick off agents, yeah, that's cool. Like, yeah, finally, look at this guy. He's doing it.
Okay, well, so Phil, you have selected this. I'm dropping you in it straight away
to do
our rewrite segment. You obviously have something in mind.
I reckon I've got two things. If you just changed it, I think people feel differently about this
film. All
right,
do it.
The first one is how Zion, the human settlement, the last bastion of humanity, is shown in the film. It's so sweaty and gross and horrible that it's very hard for the audience to care. I reckon if it looked a bit nicer and it looked a bit cooler and a bit more fun to live in.
So shallow, Phil. All you care about is appearances.
I think, but the thing
is, so shallow.
Shut up. Anyway, I really think that would make a big difference because then you'd care a lot more because you'd actually think there was something worth saving in Zion.
And
it would be a bigger catalyst for why people would go risk their lives for something.
They are Zion and they're not afraid of your opinion.
Great.
It's a little movie quote joke for you. All right. Well, so you think, and the reason you think that would change the film is because you think it's a home and a goal worth saving.
Yep, so I think it would make it would sell the film more and the why characters would risk their lives.
But you see, it doesn't tally with the world that they've created, even as early as the first Matrix, because they all wear shabby clothes, they all eat that slop, everything the body needs. It doesn't have everything the body needs. Remember that line?
Yeah, I remember that
line. It's all like they're kind of cobbled together, the ship's pretty ugly, even Cypher hates it.
Yeah, I get that.
And
it's
apocalyptic.
I get that, but I kind of always figured that was because they were on a ship and they were on like a mission, and so they didn't get the best stuff. Whereas in Zion, at least they might be, even if they had a little like part of the world where the crops were growing.
So shallow.
Crops, that means nice, like
sorry,
nature.
Okay, fair enough.
You could enjoy like a...
You're
like
undervaluing freedom there, man.
I don't have a nice house. I don't think I care about freedom. I'm quite like Cypher.
What? I don't understand what you're talking about. You don't have a nice house.
Oh my goodness.
Like, as in, if you're living in a rubbish place, what's the point of being free?
I think that's a very silly thing to say.
You could be free if you're floating in a boat on the sea. Anyway, if Zion was a bit better, I think that would be good. The other big thing I think really killed the film and killed the momentum of the franchise is that infamous architect scene at the very end of the movie.
You think this killed it?
I think it does, because if the architect was clearer what he's actually saying, I think loads of those ideas that are talked about, I think they go over lots of people's heads, basically, because it is inherently designed to be confusing. If people understood that Neo was the sixth version of the One, and actually it's part of a machine cycle, and it's all part of the machine's plans, I think that's really interesting. Mm. And it sets up the idea that even though they are free from the Matrix, they're still part of the Matrix. And so I think that really deepens the whole idea, because it changes the narrative from a sort of messiah type thing to actually really putting Neo's character in jeopardy, because he isn't this sort of special one. He's just part of the plan.
And so, you're saying this is a bad thing?
I'm saying these are all really good ideas, but it goes completely over the whole audience's head because it's hidden in ergos and vis-a-vis and therefores. That it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree. It's really annoying. Phil's taken all my ideas.
Oh, Sam.
Because they're right.
What would you have had him say?
I think if I was rewriting it, what I would do is keep him, that's fine. I would put the Oracle character, the grandma character, who's always telling Neo what to do. If she was in that scene as well, if she was in that room and was kind of, they were playing off each other, because the whole point is she's part of the Matrix as well. She's actually designed into it. She's not helping the humans, she's helping the machines. And she was still doing her kind of classic grandma, sort of explaining it with like little metaphors and things like that. I think that would bounce off really well with what the architect's saying and actually really put a lot of confusing tension between the characters in that scene. Because you've got Neo, who's sort of, he's allied with the Oracle, and the architect's explaining it callously and confusingly and very machine-like.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Oracle, who's kind of translating those words into like a human term, almost for the audience,
and
as
so
well as Neo.
I'm just going to cut to the core of this. So you're basically saying if Zion was great and the audience was able to understand the architect's point, you think that would have transformed the whole film?
I think it would have really changed how people view that film.
I'm interested. That's very interesting because they're such specific things. I'm not sure I agree with you, Phil. I'm not sure I do, because you're saying that would improve it for you. A lot of people, I don't think the bits you mentioned were their problems with the film. I would say a lot of people didn't like the indulgent action scenes. They found Neo unrelatable and Trinity kind of boring. And like they didn't like the sort of pseudo-religiosity of it. The Merovingian, what was that about?
I think that made sense to me.
I tried to write down my notes, I couldn't even spell it.
That made sense to me, actually. I understood what that was about. But I think so much of it gets lost in the dialogue that...
His speech was so much worse than the architect's, I thought.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I might agree with that one, actually, because... Why were they there? They tried to half explain it, and then they kind of gave up on that. And they're
getting
like,
the key
can't.
To open the door, to talk to the architect, to save the blind, da da da.
See, that was fine, because I think audiences understand that sort of trope of the idea of a quest. They've got to go do this and do this so that they can achieve their goal. And the thing is, they do that, and then they find out the goal is actually all part of the machine's plan. It's deconstructing the hero and making him basically a nothing. He's not a hero. He's part of the program.
Okay. Listeners, I'd be interested to know what you think about this. Sam, do you agree with Phil?
Yeah, on most of it, I think.
Yes.
I'd tweak bits and pieces. Can I go into it now?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, say what you think. Hold on. So listeners, yeah, if you agree with Phil, let us know. I personally disagree with Phil. I think on both points, actually. I'll come to that later. Sam, tell us what you think.
Yeah, so my first big thing is change the way Zion is. They've got these amazing blast doors or, you know, mainframe access codes. They pour all their money into huge, horrendous weaponized machine things.
The walking robot things,
which now everyone's ripping off because they're quite a cool thing to look at. But
you're basically saying they've got this ability to produce these giant machines and doors, but they don't have anything. They don't have a broom.
And also, exactly, yeah, they can't sweep, can't so sew. Funny.
Is that what you'd be doing if you're in Zion, Phil?
Tidy it up.
Oh well, someone's got to keep the place clean.
Somebody's got to do litter duty. Laurie.
Saving the world.
Because what do they all do all day?
Good point. Yeah, there doesn't seem to be any industry whatsoever except making bombs
and raving.
I guess they're at war though, aren't they?
Well,
even our great queen, I believe, made weapons in the war. Did she?
She was
not?
A driver.
No, she was a driver.
Very good
mechanic.
Driver.
Sorry, Majesty. Yeah, you should. Genuinely, I apologize.
Pardoned.
No, you can't do that, man. That's treasonous. You're not the queen.
I'm not taking part in any of that.
The queen still
likes me.
So you're on the side of Change Zion as well.
Yeah, I'm on the side of Change Zion. I mean, that would be a kind of a fix to the film as it stands. I'd also cancel the sweat party. I'd just say, no, guys,
no
we're not meeting in the catacombs. Instead, stay in your houses to a TV rave.
I think, man, you're missing the kind of the appeal of the end of the world rave. Have you not come across this idea before?
Yeah.
I think you'd find a lot of people disagree with you because actually it may surprise you, Sam, but some people like to go to clubs. Have you ever heard of clubs? They go clubbing at night and it's sweaty and you get beer spilt down your back. People seem to love
people
that
people don't
stuff.
Like the beer being spilt down their back.
Oh, come Isn't on, they must get... do. It's a guarantee every night.
Isn't that where you get the norovirus and, you know, the tonsillitis? The
I
clubs.
Bet there's a lot of athlete's foot going on in
no,
that.
No, let's leave that alone. But my point is actually, I don't think it looks like that terrible a party. They've got weapons of sound guys there, you know, banging big old empty oil drums and stuff to make a banging beat. And I get it. Like, their whole point is, we are Zion and we are not afraid. And it's kind of a, we might die tomorrow, so let's party like there's
no tomorrow.
No tomorrow. Quite literally. I thought that was all right. I thought that was okay.
I guess what I'm getting at is more, I didn't like quite a lot of their design choice. And I think they went for a very specific look. And I just didn't like it. I'd love to change quite a lot of the look of the
Matrix.
Well,
you need to give us a positive, because this is the rewrite. It's not the criticised.
Well, no, fair enough. So I would spruce it up. I'd make things look cleaner. I mean, can they not download, like, everything they need into their heads so they could download how to really quickly make farms and stuff like this?
Can they?
Well, Neo could plug in and then learn Kung Fu.
He doesn't ever do Kung Fu outside of
Learn
Matrix.
Agriculture.
Well, his brain knows it, so why can't he know it? This is what I mean.
Here's my thing, is that you're assuming that they don't do these things because they can't, or because it's not relevant, or because they haven't thought through the world enough. How about the filmmakers have thought it through much more deeply than that, and they're presenting something that does take into account all these things? Because there's so many people there, they must be getting food, so they must be farming or something. They are at war against the machines. They do have to spend all that money on the weaponry and on the gates.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I guess all of that is really just tweaking really minor things. So I'm going to leave those things said and then go on to my actual rewrite, which would be change the whole hero story. I think Phil's right. There is a hero story in there, and kind of I'd really simplify it. So there's the, isn't there a grand meeting of all the ships in the Matrix, the captains? I still don't understand why they were meeting. What was their purpose?
That's a good point. I don't know.
So I'd change that meeting and give them an actual purpose.
Like
so,
a goal.
A goal. So either, because Neo's just in the Matrix and he does his superhero thing. What is his superhero? He just flies around. What is he actually doing? What's his goal while he's there?
Saving Matrix cats.
Well, this is it. I thought he could actually be doing the superhero thing, and that's part of his goal, like to unlock loads of minds. So,
the people see him do this crazy stuff.
Yeah, and then they're like, what is this? But they never show that happening.
So they want to convert the Matrix people into Zion people by showing them the most Zion people.
That is literally what he says at the end of the first film.
I'm going to show you things that...
Yeah.
But they don't do it, so I rewrite and actually... follow on from the Matrix.
As in he's making massive waves across
the
Matrix
world. And loads of people are coming because, you know, this is what everyone desires from a savior. They actually turn up and do the stuff in front of them so they can see, and that would...
To be fair to the movie, they do say more people have been saved since Neo came than any other time.
Yeah,
but apparently the only person he has saved is that little kid.
Who's really irritating.
And carries his bags in Zion.
Yeah, I just don't like that.
Way to go, Neo. He's got a bag carrier. Congrats, that's fine.
He's made it.
The only one in Zion.
Yeah, I think maybe... Well, that's a good one, Sam.
Well, interesting. How interesting that Sam has said it, because did you look at my screen here? Because that's my number one big rewrite.
Oh, wow, okay. Well, great ideas are shared, Laurie. Yeah,
well, or stolen. Maybe not stolen.
Sorry.
Competitive brother going on here.
I can say that I agree with you, Sam. That's my top one here. Why did they feel the need to make it meta and kind of zoom out from the Matrix and just use the Matrix for the kind of boring Oracle stuff? He said at the end, he flies out like Superman and he says, I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. That would be a cool film. What we all loved was being in the Matrix and the tension of running away from the agents, having them kind of make progress would be awesome. To see like the world in the Matrix slowly being like, what's going on, and causing like a systematic problem throughout the city with people rising up, like that would be brilliant. Like, what's the problem with that? That would have been really, really interesting. And that could have taken it in so many different directions, because then you could have the machines freaking out. You didn't have to do that whole thing about there being multiple ones and make it existential. You could just do literally, this is the first time this has happened. Neo is the one and he's being awesome. You didn't even need to explain who the Oracle was. It's not necessary. She's a plot device. And then you could have like the machines shutting down and going into defense mode, and the Matrix becoming something else, becoming like an enemy to the machines. It would be a total rewrite.
That
just
is
go that
a completely
direction.
Rewritten.
But then you
thing.
See, that's it. It's actually quite a simple idea. Just stick with the old film. Don't bring in the new stuff. Stick with it and make progress.
The only counter I'd say to that is the fact that the first film, part of the appeal of the first film was the philosophical elements. What is reality? What is it to be?
Well, how interesting you say that, Phil, because look, I haven't just covered the basics. I want to talk about that exactly right. So what I've written here is...
Your cheat sheet.
It's not my cheat sheet. How dare you? I've said, why don't we, along with having that, why don't we have more people who are like Cypher from the original film? So his whole thing was, you call this free. All I do is what he tells me to do. I want to go back to the Matrix because I can have whatever I like. I can have a dream life and it can be normal and it made sense and it was okay. There is a sort of question. It's like, well, why are people dissatisfied with the Matrix? What are they say it's the peak of your human civilization. What's wrong with it? The answer is, it's not real. So that in itself is a philosophical question. Do you stick with a kind of idealized thing that isn't reality, which is a bit like Vanilla Sky. Have you seen Vanilla Sky?
Yeah. Yes.
Very odd film. Or do you go with the truth, which is less than perfect, which is why I don't have a problem with Zion. Zion's difficult. It's not perfect. It's a bit of a
So its
mess.
Selling point is
but
the truth.
Yeah, it is the truth. So what do you want? Do you want a sort of dreamy reality, or do you want the hard truth? And then if you do that, as the Matrix, more and more minds are freed, you also could have an emerging cult or group of people who are campaigning against Neo and the Zion team to try and bring the Matrix back.
Let us be as
yeah,
we are.
Let us be with the machines. People who feel sympathy for the machines' cause.
And that's your third film right there. You can have a battle between the machines with their human counterparts. And then you can also have, you know, Neo and his revolutionaries. I just don't think you need to base it in the real world nearly as much, because everyone loved being in the Matrix. And it's either the destruction of the Matrix or it continues as it was.
Okay.
And here we go. And check this out. I've gone even further, man. I don't mind Agent Smith coming back. I think he was slightly the wrong bad guy. You know, a bit like we were saying with Star Wars, where we overemphasize the importance of certain characters, I think they allowed Agent Smith, because he was so popular and so iconic, to slightly...
dominate.
Yeah, well, they fed him too much and he became a bit of a monster. And I thought they got it slightly wrong. So what I would do with him, keep the same thing, keep it so that he got deleted, but he didn't do what he was supposed to do. He refused to be deleted. That's a cool idea, right? That conversation he has with Neo, I love it. Actually, personally, I quite like that.
At the beginning of The Matrix Reloaded.
That's right, where he says, I didn't do what I was supposed to do, and it's because of you. You did something that I did not expect and that shouldn't have been possible, so I didn't do what I was supposed to do. What I would do is take that a different way. So Agent Smith, yes, becomes an enemy of The Matrix, but not a sort of dominating evil enemy, a kind of enemy who is becoming self-aware as a machine in a new way. Because the whole central conceit of The Matrix film is that machines have taken over the world because they became sentient and they realized they didn't need humans.
But they all
work collectively. He thinks they're a virus. Yeah, exactly. Whereas you can make it like this is a further evolution of that machine mind. He realizes he doesn't have to do that because a human has beaten him, and eventually make Agent Smith the route through which peace comes between the machines and mankind. Because as he becomes more self-aware, if you like, more human or closer to human, he then begins to understand why humans want freedom and want to exist and are not happy with being batteries.
Yeah, that does sound like a good film.
Can you imagine it? There we go. There's a rewrite for you, bro.
Yeah, I like that. That's taking all my points, taking them much further, and I'm really pleased you did.
I just want to say, I didn't take your points.
You took all of my points. I had
you
them
guys,
there.
guys, you're sharing the points.
Well, and okay, here's some final thoughts for you as well to add into this one. And these are a bit more silly. No Vicar suit for Neo.
Well, so I think
please, Vicar suit.
I thought about that one a lot. I didn't like that as a kid. I thought he looked so dumb.
Yeah, why have you done that?
I reckon I worked out what that reason is. Why does his outfit change? I reckon it's so that he was easier to CGI.
Oh, and that's probably true, actually.
So he could fly and he didn't have to worry
about
cape.
Black.
They could just worry about his bottom half skirt floating in the wind. So I think maybe that's a CGI issue rather than anything to do with costume design.
Maybe you're fair enough. I didn't like it, but maybe you're fair enough. I thought they were going for some kind of pseudo allegory between him being a religious
leader. That's what I thought initially, but I think I'm convinced by the CGI thing.
And then I've also bought, I wish Trinity hadn't slicked back her hair. I don't know what happened, but her whole character and appeal just drastically dive bombed.
She just had a shower and say,
yeah, it was constantly looked odd, and she was very serious and dour in a way that was not appealing.
Yeah, the whole Trinity line, she was a really good character in The Matrix. She did stuff, she was kind of cool, she was really good at being in The Matrix, like much better than Neo at the start. And then the second one, she fades into doing like almost nothing apart from driving a motorcycle. I was thinking if they changed the dynamic between Neo and Trinity to much more like the Incredibles, to reference another film, where, you know, you've got a superhero power couple who are brilliant at being superheroes and they do it as a team all the time, whereas they had to make Trinity this object of like really like fragile.
So you make Trinity into kind of a compliment to Neo and
exactly.
his abilities.
Yeah, yeah. So he is...
Dream team.
He is better, but they're now a dream team. So then they work together on their quest or whatever it is.
That sounds... all of these ideas are really good. I have to say that I'm...
You're quite surprised, aren't you? You're blown away.
Well, yeah, I thought I'd nailed it with my little rewrites, but apparently I was just scratching the surface of what could be done.
Who's got it right, man? I want to know. Who thinks I'm right? So that's what I want to know.
There's two things...
It's not movie court.
Yeah, it's not movie court. It's rewrite. But if you have an opinion and you want to weigh in, you can email us at superbaileybros@gmail.com.
Yeah, tell us. Did you and 2G hate the film? Would it have been better if either of the things we've suggested had happened?
And if you have any ideas yourself, let us know.
We've got an email here, this time from Sam. He says, have just listened to the podcast and wanted to throw in some thoughts on accents, and I think he means in Star Wars here, in the original trilogy. Any British guy is a bad guy, and it looks like it's going to be similar this time. But it got him thinking, if British is bad and American good, what's Scottish? Because there was Mr. Glasgow in there, so what's that accent supposed to be communicating about his character?
Maybe like anarchist?
An anarchist? That sounds like quite a risky political thing to say.
Is that offence to Scottish people? I don't know.
Yes, yeah, I would say so. And he also says, and this is, you know, this is if you haven't listened to the Star Wars review, we do really recommend. I'm not going to give away too much of this because Sam has really gone into detail about the films, but one that I can give away is haha, eating the force, #lol, he says. So that is a little Easter egg for those of you who've listened to the Star Wars review. That'll make sense. If you haven't, go back and listen to it and hear what all the joke's about.
Okay, Phil, so one thing I've thought a lot about over the recent decade, I guess, where...
Decade?
Yeah, I think so, where we've had a load of CGI animations. Toy Story... all the Pixar output. DreamWorks have done the same thing. We had Shrek. Disney have started doing it as well themselves with Frozen, Tangled. That is the predominant form for animations to take these days. I want to talk about a very specific element of it. I don't think I've seen anyone else discuss this before. Something that I have noticed about the CGI animated stuff is that when it comes to movement and when it comes to action, all the effort, you know, with the motion capture technology we've got for Avatar and the Lord of the Rings, whatever, all of the effort goes into making those movements appear natural. My problem is that there is something in either the frame rate or the smoothness of the motion or the way that the models are rendered that makes those movements lack speed and impact. So if you watched a 3D fist smash into a 3D face or something like that, I would suggest that the impact is less, far less, than exactly that same scene drawn using hand-drawn models and 2D animation. Does that make sense? I don't think I've explained that very well.
No, I think it does make sense. What you're talking about is the inherent frame rates and what is shown with a 2D animation. It's very selected. It's very much each individual frame is selected by an animator or constructed very intentionally to convey something. Whereas inherently, with a 3D animation, in order to do a punch, you show the full motion and then the full release. And
in particular, it's speed. So if you wanted to show a fast punch or a slow punch in that kind of CGI 3D rendered world, all you can do is speed up the movement of that arm. But in a 2D animation, the ways that you can zoom in or change the shape or the perspective are absolutely endless because there aren't really rules to abide by in the same way. You can be artistic with it. Similarly, you can just cut. You can have a frame in which the fist is 10 inches away and a frame in which the fist is 2 inches away. And in fact, something that does this really, really well in a slightly cheesy way is traditional Japanese anime animation. If you watch something as, you know, ludicrous as Dragon Ball Z, one thing that you can't miss is that when they do a punch, one of the characters punches the other one, you feel that impact because they often zoom from miles away, right up to this person in the blink of an eye. The punch is highlighted by a flash. You get that sort of kaleidoscopic ray of light behind them as they zoom off into the distance. And they can do slow, they can do fast, but you always feel the impact because they miss out some of those frames. They're not so obsessed with the consistency of the model and the consistency of the movement that they break the rules.
And would you say that is something that 2D animation would always have over 3D animation?
Yeah, I think it will. I don't see a way around it for CGI animation. I mean, it makes me think, you know, The Hobbit. In fact, it goes the opposite way with the current trend because The Hobbit, those three films were released with an even higher frame rate. So it was super smooth, all the animation there. And, you know, granted, it kind of made the 3D animation actually look pretty good in some cases, some of the CGI rendering. Like the models were good, but the movements weren't good.
And
it
I
was
think
too smooth.
That is inherently the problem, is that the way that 3D animation is constructed is it starts off with a frame and then you kind of wrap it in skin and then you play with a model. It's much more like stop motion animation almost, where you just slightly adjust their body and then, or you program a sort of trajectory and then you have to let the program run its course and then you just capture that. Whereas 2D animation is, it's a completely free form. There's no rules to 2D animation.
Well, there are rules, but it's the rule of the eye and it's the rule of the artist. And that's the thing that's really missing, because if you've got someone who really knows their stuff, they know exactly how far they can warp and twist the drawings that they've got before it breaks the spell. So they can really move stuff around. I mean, think of the genie in Aladdin. They are not going to be able to achieve that with CGI because he's larger than life and he's abstract and bizarre, but the talent of the artist always makes him consistently the genie, no matter what form he takes or how fast it happens, how he explodes. You know, in fact, Aladdin has great examples of that, like the Let It Rip moment, you know, where he goes in the middle of the genie song.
Yeah.
You look at the way that's animated, it's not super smooth, and in fact, it wouldn't work if it was super smooth. Another great example that comes to mind, also a Disney movie, is in Beauty and the Beast. You know, when Gaston is, I'm trying to remember whether, yeah, when he says, I'm especially good at expectorating, which means spitting. Do you remember that in Gaston?
This is the moment which we spent hours finding the perfect frame to pause.
Exactly right, because we realized as he was doing it, it was really hard to see what was really happening, because the movement was so quick and so exaggerated that you felt the impact of it and the punch of the spit, and it really worked that we forced ourselves to pause it and go in between because we were so interested in the motion.
It was the one where his lips are
super extended,
like a chameleon's tongue out from his face. Spits it out.
And it's just kind of like frame, dark, globby spit on it. It's disgusting if you if you pause it. It's really effective. Kids will never do that with CGI animation. I don't believe that they will.
And actually, I think it's surprising because you think with the advancement of technology and animation isn't a consistent medium. It's very much down to somebody's judgment and eye. You think basically you'd end up with a better, glossier product. And in lots of cases, that is true. But yeah, I think you're right. The ability of animation to exaggerate and
it's particularly speed, motion, and impact, and like emotional impact as well. The way they can twist perspective and color, it's just so far away from CGI, 3D rendering. And people are talking about Studio Ghibli. They've lost Miyazaki.
Hayao Miyazaki. Yeah.
Yeah, the lead guy. People are saying their next feature is going to be CGI.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I heard, yeah. They're going to move away from that kind of style animation. And that is sad business because we rely on them to produce just such animations that I'm talking about.
Mm.
I find them much more evocative, in many cases more disturbing, because it can really warp. Like, some of their imaginary ideas are so kind of weird and nightmarishly rendered. They stay with you a lot longer. The impact is so much greater. But it will be a great loss, I think, to cinema if that kind of cell animation goes.
What's funny is the film which I keep on thinking about in my head is, do you remember Tintin, the animated film?
Capture? Uncanny Valley Tintin.
Yeah, that film really bothered me because you'd think with the motion capture thing, you'd get very natural movements of the characters. And actually, because of the way it's filmed, the camera isn't, you don't need to worry about the camera angles. You just film the action or capture the action in a 3D space. And then you can position the camera anywhere you want, and it doesn't cost any more. It doesn't affect production values at all. Literally, it's just a case of where do you want to show the action. And actually, I found that film thoroughly unenjoyable because the camera never settled. It was constantly moving and swirling around this action that was sort of larger than life.
Are you thinking of that mountain scene in the minecart or whatever it was, where they just flew down the hill?
Or it was Hinton's chasing a bird on a bike, and then he ends up sort of grinding down some wires and the camera's sort of swirling around, and it's almost like a roller coaster.
It's interesting you say that, because that's probably an attempt by the filmmakers to do what I'm talking about, but render it in this kind of animation, and it's there for all to see how it doesn't work, because the brain just can't associate those two things together, the wacky physics and the ludicrous. It's like watching a computer game, like Tony Hawk's Pro Skateboarder, where you grind on the top of a massive skyscraper or whatever
and
it is.
And then spin around and do a manual.
And just fall all the way down to the bottom without any trouble. Like, yeah, it feels like that.
And actually, I think what the reason why I bring that up is with 3D animation, it is true you can achieve pretty much anything now, and it's not that difficult to show an explosion or whatever. You just kind of, it's quite a physical thing, so you just have to design a program that will represent the physical qualities of that. But actually, I don't think that is really what filmmaking is about, especially when it comes to 2D animation. 2D animation is every single part of that, what's included in that shot, is very carefully planned out to show a style and consistency and within its own defined world. And so, like you say, Aladdin, how it shows something fantastical, it has to decide very much how it's going to show that. It's not a case of, right, we need to plan what an explosion would look like. It's, we are going to draw an explosion in this world and it's going to be part of this style. And I think the limits of 2D animation actually enables animators to produce a much more creative, distinct
product. Well, I mean, this is the age-old principle that actually limits other things that inspire creativity. You know, it's a much passed around clip now, but you've got George Lucas saying during the making of the Star Wars prequels, you know, pretty much anything I can imagine, I can do. I suspect we're talking budgets, time, efficiency. It is much more efficient. As you said, you can put the camera wherever you want. You know, you can just look at the modeled scene and you can rotate it during editing. No need to reshoot. You've got it. You can just move the camera wherever you like.
You would firmly say that that's not the right approach, wouldn't you? I think I would very much agree. I think 2D animation has something that is unique to offer. And actually, as CGI moves and 3D animation moves closer and closer to reality, what is it we're actually losing? I think we're losing the style and as you say,
it's the art. I think that's what it is. So you talked about Aladdin or whatever. You know, it's not hard to keep a model consistent because you just send it there and the model's the same. But when you're talking about retaining a style of movement and a style of kind of physics.
An expression. And
exactly. That's an artistic sense. It's not a clinical sense.
And it can't be generated. It has to be produced.
Exactly right. And I know, yeah, I just believe that's what's lacking. Anyway, I'm not ready for 2D animation to disappear from the big screen because I loved it. Just think about watching The Lion King. Those films, they're so strong in the memory, not just for the story, but because the visual style was so compelling.
I very much agree. And you mentioned Studio Ghibli. I'd be very sad if they stopped making 2D animation films.
It can't happen, man. I mean, Japan is one of the few places that I think will always retain some of its traditional animation styles because they're way more interested in the sort of heritage of that.
The craftsmanship of it all.
Yeah, exactly. And so I hope we'll see more from there. But I certainly remember reading that the next one's going to be a CGI animation.
Sad times.
Oh, dear. Okay, anyway, that was just it. A little small angle on it. And I hope we contributed something useful to that big debate. Don't ditch the paintbrush just yet.
Laurie, have you... You're a married man.
I'm a married man, yes.
Now, you probably watched a few movies with your wife, I'm guessing.
Many.
Many movies.
She often doesn't manage to make it all the way through.
Doesn't quite make it to the end, does she?
Yeah, she's a good sleeper. It's one of her many gifts.
Well, so the thing which I was wondering is, have you ever tried to show her a favourite movie?
Oh, yeah.
It's sad. I'm sensing that you're sharing in my pain here. There is nothing worse than trying to show a favourite movie to somebody else.
Who doesn't, yeah.
It's stressful, isn't it?
Well, there's a whole sort of sequence of events you go through. I mean, I'll be honest, I've done this less with my wife because, you know, she already knows all my insecurities and everything else. So I'm a little bit less nervous about it.
You're laid bare already.
Yeah, so there's not so much giveaway. But friends, man, like, this happened to me with When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, I love that movie. Oh, possibly my favourite.
What an incredible film. Like, the script in that, amazingly, I think they've got great chemistry. I'd never have put them together. But anyway, that's by the by. This is the kind of stuff I was saying. Like, this is it. I had my friends. It was when I was a student. I was like, oh, this is going to be great. This is going to be great. And I was getting the, you know, you go through the whole thing. If you get the room ready, you position all the chairs and you get the lighting right. And you
have to kind of brief them, don't you? Almost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You've built it up all week. You're like, guys, this is great. Like, it's just so funny. There's a couple of bits that are a bit risque. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's great. You'll love it.
It's sort of funny, but there's like a sweet moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sort of romantic, and
it's got some really quotable lines in it, blah, blah, blah.
And
blah, blah.
I guarantee you'll recognize a couple of scenes. You'll definitely recognize a couple of bits.
Oh, yeah, you will. That's right. Yeah, you'll be ringing bells all over the place. And the thing, and I build it all up and I'm feeling so headed up. I'm all like, I'm a bit nervous. They're all sat there. I'm looking at their eyes.
Thing is, it doesn't end there. It snowballs.
Oh.
They've missed the first joke, and you let it slide. It's like, okay, it's just one. There's still time for them to appreciate.
They'll get it by the end.
They just give them a couple moments, and then the next goat comes, and you think, and you cannot help it. You have to look at them. You have to stare at them like a freaky golem in the corner, as they not even watching at this point now.
Yeah.
They're on their phones, and you say, you could sort of, are you watching? Oh, this, I love this bit.
What's at the heart of that? Because, oh, it's a crushing experience when they don't share it. You know, that most recently happened to me was Star Trek IV, The Voyage.
Oh, the whale one.
The whale. The truth is, though, I was one of the people, like, even though I was the one who made us watch it, I somehow didn't quite get captivated in the way it did before. But I don't know what it, maybe it just reveals, doesn't it? In films, they're such a personal, emotional experience. When they're good, that's what they are to you. And it's very, very hard to share that with someone. To get them to experience it on the same level as you is nearly impossible. I don't know why we even try.
But I've dated girls in the past and I thought, I'll share
this
them.
This is going to be it. This
I'll
is going to be the
me,
moment where
and
we...
then they'll, oh, this will be the perfect litmus test to see if they really know me.
And then
love
the thing
me.
Is, then they see you and they think, yeah.
You sort of tentatively sort of inquire. So what did you think? Yeah, it was good.
Look, well, here's what you should do. Here's what I'm going to do henceforth. Lock that door. Well,
lock
the movie's over. Lock the door. Lock all the doors. No toilet breaks. No loud, crisp eating and crunching. Find out exactly what each person thought. Give them a scorecard. Review the scorecard. Find the mean and the median.
Yep.
Look at it. You know, you set your own ahead of time, of course. If the number is unsatisfactory, you give them a talk, man. You sit them down. You explain to them. You explain to them in...
Have a PowerPoint prepared.
Exactly right. In detail, why they are wrong, how they are wrong, how they should react. And don't even think about letting them leave.
Show a couple of case studies, I think, as well.
Yeah, but the important thing is to make sure no one leaves that room without feeling the same way as you.
And also, if they haven't got a joke, explain it to them. That is the key.
Yeah, exactly. Straight away, actually. What I will be doing now is pausing after every joke.
Just during it and just sort of...
That's right. And then say, just explaining the setup. That's right. Yeah. So actually what he just said, like, it makes a lot of sense because earlier on, Roger was saying this in the movie and you see, oh, you'll get it in a minute. That kind of thing. Yeah. And then if they don't laugh, then you pause it again and explain it again, but maybe a bit more seriously this time.
And then, and what do you do about phones, Laurie?
It's not been a problem for me so much because my house, the signal is so atrocious.
Turn off the Wi-Fi. Get the Wi-Fi out. No internet. No Candy Crush. Mm. Candy Crush free zone. Do not be playing on your phone. It's very much like the movies, actually. Like the cinema.
Mm.
Just don't be messing with my favorite film.
I'm with you, man. It's a raw subject. It's a dangerous subject. But I feel your pain. Well, there we go. That's episode 8 over and done with. Sorry if you felt the lack of a movie thing, but we do have good news on that.
Yeah, we've got some really exciting things for 2016. I can't believe it's 2016 already. We've got a choice of movies. We're not sure exactly which one we're going to be doing. Maybe we'll leave it up to listeners to decide. We're thinking possibly Joy, the brand new film from the same director of Silver Linings Playbook and American Hustle. He's doing another collaboration with Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper. Or there's The Hateful Eight, the new Quentin Tarantino film, looking like it's going to be a big drawn out Tarantino fest. And then lastly, there's the new Rocky installment, this time called Creed, following his sort of rival son, I think, or something like that.
What we're talking about is which film you'd like us to do next week. So if either of those three sound any good, tell us which one you're keen for us to fit into our hectic and busy lives. And we'll make sure we hit the cinema and we're ready to review for your listening pleasure.
Are we wrapping up, Laurie?
Yeah, we're wrapping up. This is the outro, Phil. Eight's great. Thanks very much, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. Bye.